And welcome to the latest episode of Betfair's Weighed In podcast, coming to you on Monday, a little bit later than normal, 1:30 start time due to one of the boys. I think it was Kevin Blake kicking up a fuss, but Brendan Duke's very happy with the later start time. We're off the back of a weekend of racing that I was very excited about. We've had Guineas trials, we've had good flat action, we've seen some nice newcomers. And obviously, we've had all the action up at air with the Scottish National and Willie's World, et cetera, et cetera. Going to be going through it with the boys. Brendan Duke, how are you enjoying this later start time? Do you have a lie-in?
Yes, I did. I did have a lie-in and I was working all weekend, so it gave me a chance to catch up on everything. So I'm coming in here fully primed and very excited. Spring sprung over the weekend. It was scorchio in Ireland. So, yeah, very encouraging signs. We may get into the low field yet, Vanessa.
Well, I don't mean to bang on about the weather, because doing that is terribly British, but you guys, I heard, had 16, 17 degrees bright sunshine. It's been very cold here. Keep getting in my car at night and it gives me a little ice warning, Kevin. So not ideal conditions. Yeah, drove back from the pub at about 11:30, got in the car and it was like ping, ping, ice warning, 2 degrees. Not happy, Kev, not happy. Although I'm happy about the new pub in the village. Good pub. Give it a 7 out of 10.
Seven. Okay. They won't be happy about that, Vanessa. You definitely won't get an ambassadorial role dishing out 7 out of 10 ratings.
No, that's true.
A new pub. Sorry, Vanessa. A new pub in Yorkshire. I thought they all were 12th century pubs around there, no?
They are in Yorkshire for sure. There's no room for new pubs up there. But I live in Oxfordshire most of the time. And it's not a new pub. It's the Royal Oak at Eden. Eden, do you remember I taught you all about that?
One-time
Derby hope. Eden. So up in the village of Eden is a pub and it's come under new management. So we went to go suss it out. I stuck on the non-alcoholic beverages so that I could give it a true and honest reading the next day. 7 out of 10 is the outcome.
Yeah, they'll be giving you a few whiskies the next day and hope to get a 9.
Yeah, quite. Let's kick straight on with the racing review section, guys, because as I said, plenty to dissect and get through. And we're going to go off on a few tangents, the first of which may be in and around McDermott, who, of course, won the Scottish National by a nose in the end for Team Willie Mullins and all but securing the British trainer's title in the process. Obviously, we talked about on Racing Only Better how many bullets he was firing at air. Was 18 declarations in total. McDermott won the big one, Kev. Looks as though it's going to go his way, the trainer's title. Were you enthralled by the day and the outcome? Obviously, it's hard to really celebrate it not knowing officially, but we think we're over the line, aren't we, with this?
Yeah. I think the some parties have paid out, and it looks extremely well, very much in the bag. And look, it was another layer of intrigue for the day, wasn't it? You know, slightly mental that Willie can bring over a load of horses that nobody's ever really heard of in Britain and go and win the Scottish National and have a bunch of other winners. Just speaks to the depth he has. And speaks to what Irish trainers are coming up against every day of the week, over here, every racing day at least. And McDermott was very tough. Jeez, it was a highly exciting race, in fairness. And he got the job done for that man, Danny Mullins. It was an enjoyable race. Slightly depressing day for Paul Nicholls and Dan Skelton, I'm sure, who have, you know, really slogged it out this season and were set for a real slobber knocker of a finish to the Trainers' Championship, and Willie has decided to try with a couple of weeks to go and is going to win it. That's pretty depressing for them, I'd imagine, but look at that's where we are.
Yeah, and you say that I can imagine, obviously outwardly in the interviews Nicholls and Skelton are doing, it's all, you know, they can toe the party PR line, they can say they're disappointed, but they put a relatively positive spin on it, or whatever you want to say, Brendan. But deep down, those boys, I think Paul Nicholls losing a trainer's championship over here, full stop to anyone, is a really, really bitter blow for him. And as for Dan Skelton, my heart broke for him as the McDermott result was called, just because he has thrown everything he has at this. And that was the final nail in the coffin. So I don't know. I wasn't in a celebratory mood. I felt sorry for the boys.
Yes, yeah, so Dan Skelton has had an exceptional season, so I think he'll look back on it and give himself a 9 out of 10, and you'd imagine that trainers' championships do await him. But I suppose depressing is it depressing? Yes, it. I mean, it probably is. Particularly, you said you used the phrase "Willie's world." Whatever about McDermott, particularly when you look at Sharjah. I mean, what a horse Sharjah has been, you know, a couple of Mathisons and Morgiana. But then aged 11, we bang him into a 3 mile novice handicap chase and we'll win that. And he does, and he goes and wins it. So he can do what he wants. I'm conscious that I've talked before about how difficult I have great difficulty envisaging the end of dynasties, and with this case you just see Willie getting stronger and stronger. Will it ever end? But I'm conscious of the fact that if we were doing a podcast in the 5th century, I'd be there, these Romans, they can't be beaten, they're going to rule forever. So Dan certainly, I'm not so sure about Paul Nicholls, but Dan certainly should be conscious that dynasties don't last forever.
I'm sure he'll take some, a bit of consolation in those words, Brendan. Well said. I tell you what, one thing is for sure is that, you know, everyone wangs on about Willie being a genius. Not a bit of it. They can't get Mr. Incredible to race even when he has jumped off. So they're not all perfect, are they, Kev? What about that horse? I mean, just a little side note. Imagine you get him to jump off and then he says, actually, I regret my life choices.
And he'd been good for a while. He was my pick in the National. And now I can't say I was overly happy. Like, he made it quite an unfortunate exit. He went up the back end of was a Mahler Mission, who was unseating at the time. But yeah, he's gone the wrong way. Clearly, he just said no. Computer says no, and and just did not fancy it. So when you have one at that level, I can only imagine the depths of frustration. When you have things like this happen. But it's the old counter when our friends and the animal rights organizations say, you know, well, these horses don't have a choice in the matter. Yes, they do. And Mr. Incredible exercised his option of having a choice in the matter here and said, no, thank you, I will not race today.
Tell me this, Kev, right, in terms of this Mullins domination whilst we're on the topic, right? So it's an 18th Irish Trainers' Championship. It's obviously a British Trainers' Championship at the same time. It's 100 Cheltenham Festival winners. It's eight out of eight grade ones at Dublin Racing Festival, and a Gold Cup, a Grand National, and a Champion Hurdle treble as well. And hopefully he'll steer Paul Townend to a Jockeys' Championship in Ireland. Obviously Patrick, amateur champion. I mean, it really is. The word domination gets banded around a lot, but that is the phrase here. And a few years back, we didn't think that Willie's domination could get much bigger. And yet it has. We've got to this season and all those triumphs I've just reeled off there. How much further can it go? Or is this the ceiling now? Is this it now? Or is there even more to come, terrifyingly so?
Well, like, the question that the industry will probably ask itself is, can we allow this to organically play out? Which is what has happened historically. You allow things to play out, and like Brendan alluded to, you know, we have had, you know, very strong trainers in the past, and the wheel has turned, and it's gone from one country to the other, and one trainer to another, etc. But the one I hark back to is, like, literally 10 years ago, I wrote a column called "Is Willie Mullins Making National Hunt Racing Boring," and that was 10 years ago. And, you know, you look back on Twitter and the comments underneath, like, and there's more than a few saying, like, look, it's a cycle, it'll turn, it'll change. These things always do. And 10 years later, and like you say, we're bursting through the glass ceiling again in terms of how high he's going to go. And I think he's going to get more dominant before he gets less dominant. Wow. How can it change? You know, you look at the factors involved. You look at the sourcing of the horses. You look at the decisions owners are making. You look at the unbelievable variety and depth of his owners. Like, you know, he was once upon a time, he was in a position where Jigginstown could hurt him by taking 60 horses out overnight, which they did. And FYI, that very season, he still set a career best record of winners, despite that happening. Like, you're just dealing with a very, very savage, relentless machine here. And it's very hard to envisage it changing. I got some stick for questioning the amount of push in some of the British trainers to try and help the wheel to turn, because that's how it works. You know, it's the Romans get fat and lazy, and who was it? So some barbarians came up from out of the wilderness and were a lot hungrier for the job and ended up getting them out of there. And that's what you need in any business cycle that we're referring to here. You need, you know, ambitious, innovative people coming underneath that'll just outwork the dominant player. But Willie's not slowing down. I don't know if they're picking up speed behind him. So, the next question is, should we consider systemic interventions to try and stimulate a turning of the wheel? Is that fair? Is that right? You know, this discussion was had earlier in the season when the BHA proposed a cap on runner numbers per trainer in big handicaps, and that got heavily shot down. Personally, even though it goes against a lot of my instinctive beliefs, you know, I can see some sense in some interventions because I just can't see this changing organically. But look, that's a big old discussion for another day. We definitely won't let it detract from what Willie's done this season, because it's been incredible, and it's going to be capped off there in what is going to be a very dominant 2 weeks of remaining action either side of the Irish Sea, I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely. Imagine being part of that team rolling into Punchestown. You know you're going to come away with, what, 12, 15, however many winners you like, really, and then have a celebration at the end that really will be a proper celebration and a deserved one. Credit to the team, but a nod to the boys that have tried to chase him in Dan Skelton and Paul Nicholls.
And you mentioned all the records, Vanessa. He's got one more that he's going to pass in the next week or so. I got some great help from Martin Murphy in HRI. On this to try and tally up career winners, and he's currently 10 behind Dermot Weld in terms of the winning most Irish based trainer of all time. And I assumed there was going to be Punchestown he'd do it, but given the amount of entries he has this week, he might get it done before then, which is a phenomenal achievement. And you'd imagine he's gonna carry on, drive on, and get up past 5,000 at some stage, which is nuts.
Mental, absolutely mental. One of them might come up Foss Lass this afternoon. Patrick was on a train to Foss Lass earlier, to the west of Wales. So winners are coming from all angles. Let's move on and talk about some of the flat action, Brendan, because of course we've had the Craven meeting since me and you last spoke over at Newmarket, and Guineas Trials to the fore at Newbury as well. I don't think anything has massively blown anyone away in terms of classics, but let's rattle through a few of them, because Pretty Crystal won the Nell Gwyn for the Fahey team. Obviously, she's been cut into 12-1 for the 1,000 guineas off the back of this. Now, she kind of struggled to convert into group company as a two-year-old, but we know how these Dubawis can improve, and she's clearly come out really fit, ready for her debut by all accounts, and she just sort of handled all conditions, track, environment better than a dance sequence, but obviously the rest of the field as well. Do you expect, like many others, that the likes of dance sequence and others will improve past her on their next run?
Yes, I do. I think you've summed it up very well. They're really likable filly, great way of going. I love her. I love her head carriage, and she clearly has improved, as you said. The Dam was a decent performer at around Group 3 level. I would guess this is her level. Dance sequence had two runs as a two-year-old, and that disparity in experience, I think, told late on. So I would expect Dance sequence to improve past her. I'd be surprised if Pretty Crystal is any shorter than 12-1 come the day for the 1,000 guineas, but a very likeable filly.
Yeah, they seemed with Dance Sequence, the Appleby team actually seemed pretty happy with that as a trial. And considering, you know, it wasn't, you know, she's had a couple of runs, it seems very evident, Brendan, that that Dance Sequence is still, even now, very much a work in progress mentally, I suppose, as much as anything.
Yeah, well, that's the way it played out. It's interesting. I mean, she did go off even money, or perhaps even a shade of odds on. I can't remember. So Appleby might have been happy, but the punters would have been a bit chagrined. But yes, she learned a lot from that experience. There's no doubt about it. But maybe if she was going to be a Guineas winner, she still would have found a way to win. Am I being harsh?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, like I think that's a bit of a theme with many of the trials we saw last week. Like you know, they're all very smart horses, but in terms of where they sit on the ladder compared to, you know, the top 2 year olds last season, like they are down in the second tier, and you're hoping one jumps up, and as can happen, especially with fillies, you're just looking for one to jump up and really slap you in the face and say, right, I've improved a lot over the winter, and I'm going to be a factor now. And for me, I don't think we saw that. We saw some lovely fillies of varying levels of promise that will hopefully drive on from here. But, you know, did anything leap up and hit me in the face and say, yeah, I'm going to be, you know, a contender in Irish Guineas or something like that? Probably not. And it's a bit of a cultural change as well, Vanessa. Like, I know we've had good horses win these trials in recent years, but it seems like a long time since, you know, like I said, Frankel ran in a Greenham. You know, you just, with real top 2 year olds, it just doesn't even seem to be a seriously considered option for the vast majority of them now. And maybe it comes down to the trainers. I don't think these trials are what they used to be. I know they serve a purpose, but no Frankels here, I don't think.
No, I think that's a fair summary. Let's move on to all things Hannon and Guineas and Classics, etc., because he is a trainer who's had an excellent start to the season, really firing on all cylinders. And one horse that didn't surprise the punters or him, Brendan, was this Star Style, who's an outsider for a Guineas. Obviously, it was just a debut at Newbury. She won a confined maiden there over the 7 furlongs. She readily kind of bolted up, and in the post-race interviews, it seemed no surprise at all. They seemed very, very positive on her, I thought.
Yeah, well, I mean, they should be. I mean, the Pink Stalls, tanks through race, wins 6 lengths. Pretty, yeah. pretty good. Obviously, the huge ask whether they will even put her into the Guineas on the back of this. I'd be half surprised if they do, but you'd have to be very excited about her going forward. I mean, she's run to a good figure on debut with the promise of a lot more to come. So you'd have to be massively excited.
Yeah.
And a good few days for Julie Wood.
I know, Julie Wood, Voyage as well. Yeah. She did a
great... That voyage. I mean, that would have you questioning everything you think you know about horse racing, wouldn't it? I mean, how, like, the horse is in the Derby. So you think it's been shown something at home. It's a Newbury maiden, Hannon, 28 to 1. How does it go off 28 to 1? And then the run style in the race, again, jumps very well, really takes a significant pull through the race, is still pulling, turning for home. Dobbs eventually gives up. The horse is hanging out about a half a mile from home out front. You think, well, this is going to fall in a hole, but it's still been a promising run. Then they come to it a furlong out, and it goes away again. And, I mean, it's just like, I mean, my gasp was flabbered watching the race. I was there. How could this be? I know some of the main players didn't necessarily step up according to the market. But, I mean, it's a Newbury maiden. I mean, this horse must have some engine. I just don't understand how a horse with that keen-going run style isn't showing a lot on the gallops, that they can let it go off 28 to 1. But anyway, I had to jump in there, Vanessa, because I thought this was the performance of the weekend, but certainly in terms of having me scratching my head, and the horse has piqued my interest. I'll be very interested to see how he goes on, particularly if they can teach him to relax.
But isn't it great, like, when I love it when horses really surprise everyone around them at home? Like, obviously horses can surprise us on the outside with regularity. We have our assumptions, we look at the market, but, you know, those big operations, been here many times before, they know what they've got on their hands, and yet still horses can surprise them. I love that. Did you see that tiny little greyhound of a filly, Brendan, at Newmarket, the Hugo Palmer filly, the Calyx filly? She won.
Oh, yeah, Calyx filly, lovely, yes.
Yeah, Calyx filly, don't you worry, I'll be getting that in every show from now on. And, you know, they did an interview afterwards, Hugo did, saying they took her for a race course gallop and she basically got lapped. You know, as in, like, she just showed nothing and was a total work in progress. And I love it. I love the surprises. That's what it's all about, Brendan.
No, absolutely. I'm just amazed that this horse was in the Derby and given his run style. Anyway, the whole thing's a mystery to me, but a very interesting horse to look forward to throughout the season.
He's currently 33 to 1 from 100 to 1 for the Derby from those initial entries. Would you have any interest, Kevin, in Voyage?
Probably not. No, Julie Wood was saying afterwards that, you know, it's her ambition to have a runner in the Derby. Look, it's all a bit of a rush now. You'd love to see him in a trial before then. It's just all a little bit tight. At the very best of luck to them, wasn't an expensive buy as a foal. The underbidder was looking to buy him with a view to making him a National Hunt store horse. So it's funny how things work out. Yeah, the best of luck to him. He was
Yeah.
impressive. Like he travelled, he hands and heels quickened up well. Yeah, sure. Look at the Derby. Like my all the guts in me would say, yeah, that's all a bit too much of a rush. Take your time, and you know, if things go right between now and then, you can try and go to an Irish Derby maybe. But we'll see. We'll let him off. We'll let them live the dream. That's what it's all about.
Absolutely. And Julie Wood really is. What a lovely weekend she had. What a lovely week of sport she had. Let's stick with Hannah and Brendan. Hartem obviously winning the Craven. Should give him a mention, springing a little bit of a surprise in the Craven. Now 20 to 1 for the 2,000 guineas. Of course, he was a well-tried two-year-old. He was well beaten by City of Troy. Is this a case of kind of right place, right time, right circumstances, boxes ticked, whereas the rest of the field kind of didn't, and he just came out on top as a result of the circumstances?
Quite possibly, but even if they repeat the formula of last season, he could be in the right place again at some stage this season, couldn't he? I mean, he 9 starts as a 2-year-old, probably unlucky in the Woodcut, runs well in the Coventry, runs well in the July Stakes, albeit, you know, deferential against City of Troy, as you mentioned. Then picks up as Group 2 in the Richmond, just keeps going. Didn't pull up any trees on his next 4 starts. Rocks out here over a mile. You're not sure about stamina. By the end of the race, I thought he wanted to step up and trip. So just a very likable horse who's clearly a trip versatile and could easily have another 8 or 9 runs this season, and maybe he'll have another day in the sun.
Would you, I'd put this to you, Brendan, then, just in terms of guineas, trials, etc. Would you rather have Pretty Crystal in a 1,000 guineas at 12 to 1 or Hartem in a 2,000 guineas at 20 to 1?
Well, yeah, I'll go for Hartem because there's an element of a bad each way angle to it. I'm not gone on either, as you can tell.
Okay, fine. It's, you know, like to get the canvas the opinions. What about same
Well,
question you have quick?
I tell you, with the way the Hannon's horses have been running, and that the 3-year-olds are coming out and winning, you know, kind of second tier ones, you know, it contextualizes like they're talking really big about Rosalian at the minute,
Yeah, they are. They
really
are.
big. Talking about, I know looking the Hannons can be bullish. It's their sort of characters, but very big talk about Rosalian, calling them the best they've ever had, and like, they've had some right ones, obviously. And he's been training for the Guineas. You know, he beat Unquestionable, who came out and won the Breeders' Cup afterwards. So yeah, you think your gut tells you that the 2,000 guineas in particular is going to be heavily dominated by horses that we haven't seen yet this year. Can Hatem get in the mix? Potentially, but that'd be it. You'd be looking for him to fall into third, I think, being realistic, would you, at the very best?
Yes, but given that he's such a solid and, as Brendan said, likable colt at 20 to 1 as an each way bet, he's probably, if people like him, who would we be to put you off him? Fulgaria won the Guineas trial, the 1,000 Guineas trial, obviously at Newbury, is now 12 to 1 as being for the French 1,000 Guineas, which has very much been labelled as her next target. She's obviously unbeaten filly over in Italy, comes over here to the UK on her debut and toughs it out. Actually, it's more than that, kind of relatively impressive for the Marco Botti team. And of course, it was a very poignant victory because Marco wasn't there as he was at Stefano Curci's funeral in Italy. Partner was there and spoke very emotionally about what this victory of Fulgaria meant to the team. And on that day, Kev, it clearly was a pretty special victory at Newbury.
Yeah, big time. And look really interesting on a few fronts. You know, this was the champion 2-year-old filly in Italy. Italy gets plenty of snobbery thrown its way. So it's nice to see her come over here and win a Group 3 on her first start for Marco in Britain. And look, I thought she was good and tough. You know, can she hopefully she can drive on from here. Like, for me, my main takeaway from this race was Holly Doyle, you absolute gangster. Like, I thought she just this was just an unbelievable bit of race riding. You know, she came from behind El Malca, and she didn't have to up James Doyle, pinned him in. pinned him in by coming around him and making sure there was no space. And Imelka had to switch around and rallied, came home really well. Like, for me, was an unlucky loser, beaten half a length. But gee, I'd say with all the jigger and the poker, and lost more than half a length. So I take my proverbial hat off to Holly Doyle. This was a real victory for jockeyship. But the filly was very good herself, and hopefully she can drive on and continue. Look, it'll be tougher for her now. She's with penalties, etc. But this would have been a really sweet one, not just on an equine front, but on a personal front as well for all involved, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know, you know, how much it'll mean as well for the Botti team to, as you say, Kev, you know, really promote that Italian racing, the Italian form, and that they can produce class. So I think a lot of people will have a lot of goodwill towards her.
Because just quickly, Vanessa, like, if people that don't really follow the international stuff, like, Italian racing's in a shocking bad way, like, has been for quite some time. Like, they've lost all their group ones, they're losing black type races each and every year. There's been a bit of a change down there lately, and they're hoping, like, it was to the point where they were going to lose all their black type races for a few different political reasons and prize money reasons. So this would have meant a lot to the Italian racing community, and it should look, hopefully they can turn things back around. There's some great, you know, Italy's played a major role in the development of the thoroughbred breed, so you hate to see it go the way it's going. So hopefully they can turn that around.
Side note, Brendan, if we're talking about Italy, have you yet watched Ripley on Netflix?
I have not watched Ripley, no.
You should. Beautifully okay. Shot in Italy, on the Amalfi Coast mainly. Top class. Thoroughly enjoy it. But it's in black and white, and it also has subtitles. So it's quite a focus piece of viewing.
I turn subtitles on for everything.
Oh?
Everything I watch, I turn subtitles on.
Well, that's interesting.
Pretty certain I have ADHD or something. I find it very helpful.
Okay, there's other podcasts for that, Kev, actually. right, Brendan, we need to keep rattling on, please, because quick mention for Hamish winning the John Porter, real good feel-good factor around the eight-year-old for the Haggis Yard. You all know the story by now. He's been around for many a year. It's pretty rare that flat racing has a story like him. Obviously, ridden by William Haggis's wife, Maureen, every day, trained by William Haggis, bred by William's dad in Brian Haggis, and is now a 33-1 shot from 50s for the Coronation Cup. Look, he's a Group 3 machine, isn't he? Is that his eighth Group 3, I think, now? Basically, the question is, but what does it really matter? Because he's just a legend at a level. But is he ever going to be able to win a big Group 1?
Well, dare I criticise William Haggis, who is a master of race planning. But I think they half missed a trick last year with the Irish Ledger. I remember we were talking about, I think he was supposed to run off 122 with an Ebor. And you were saying, oh, and is he Yorkshire man? But anyway, even he blanched at running the horse off 122 with an Ebor. And I just assumed he'd have another go at an Irish Ledger, having run off his face to get close to a peak form Kyprios the previous year. But they didn't run him for whatever reason. So
Was it the ground? I'm trying to remember what the ground was like. They're very adamant that it could have been the ground.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, then fair enough.
Adamant that he can't have anything like good ground, even that he needs it. He needs it softer. That could have been it off the top of my head.
It could have been. I'll have to check that, and I may have to apologise to William Haggis. But smashing the horse, good to soft at Newbury. We talked before the race, Vanessa, about the water table conditions in his favour. Dare I suggest, is he getting a bit cute, which he's entitled to be as an eight-year-old? But he kind of got to the front and looked around in Tom Marcand's hand. So I think he was value for more than the winning margin. I think he has the ability to pick up a Group 1 given the right conditions, given how close he got to Kyprios. He probably won't get them in the Coronation Cup. Last year was unusual because they didn't seem to order Epsom as much for the Friday as they usually do in terms of preserving it for Derby Day. I thought the ground was quicker on the Friday than normal. If he got some sort of a freakish weather around that time, he'd have a squeak in a Coronation Cup. But I think the Irish Ledger, if he could get his ground in the Irish Ledger, he'd be a big runner in that.
Okay, interesting. Kev, get your stats man to do the stats on eight-year-olds winning a first Group 1 at the age of, in their eighth-year-old season.
It's probably happened in an Irish Ledger, ironically. I'd say if you look back through the winners of that, that might well have, something like that might well have happened in that race.
Mark Johnson won an Irish Ledger with a horse who was a good age. I don't know, was it his first Irish?
Was it Jukebox Jewelry?
Oh, that's a shame.
How old was he at the time?
He was a good age.
And we'll just quickly mention White Birch, Brendan.
He was only five. He was a young fella.
He was a youngster. White Birch won the alleged stakes at the Curragh the other day. Obviously has a Coronation Cup or a Tattersall's Gold Cup being mentioned as his potential targets. Obviously, we know, Brendan, this horse hasn't always been straightforward, specifically sort of in and around the stalls. But obviously a bit of age, bit of sort of calmness now in his mind. He's got the talent, hasn't he?
When we're talking about that, the rarefied heirs of Group One, I'm not sure. He was better at the gates, to your point. Still inclined to take a little bit of a tug early. The horse's only had eight runs in his life, so he's entitled to still be learning. I thought it was a very encouraging performance. We know he handles Epsom, ran well in the Derby last year. Form kind of tailed off after that, but it was only two runs, in fairness. You feel like he could do very well at home in these at this kind of Group Three level, etc. But the connections, understandably, have a lot of faith in the horse, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do roll the dice in a Coronation Cup. While he is trip versatile, I think a mile and a half would see him to best effect. Whether he'll be up to, I mean, he certainly has ground to make up on King of Steel from last year's Derby, and whether he'll be up to a likes of an Emily Upjohn, I don't know. But at 20-1. I don't think it's the worst price in the world if they decide to go that way.
Okay, interesting then. Not as quite as positive as I sort of bowled on in there. You finished on a positive note.
Yeah, give a good shout to the runner-up.
Yeah.
Masseuse carrying a penalty, first run of the season. I thought she ran huge. I think she could be a Group One filly.
Okay.
Really, really happy with her. Loads of talent. Still a little bit raw when she got new. She did the same thing at Fairy House. She just came off a true line ever so slightly when she got to the front and was only just worried out of a close home. But if you watched, I couldn't believe it. I was there and I was just happened to watch her pass the line. Like, she's six lengths away from the winner, 100 yards after the line. So I'd say when the time is right, she'll try a mile and a half. And I was taken with her now. I thought it was a huge run. I got all credit to the winner, take nothing away from him, but I couldn't help but be very impressed with Masseuse in defeat. So hopefully she can drive on from this.
Okay, well, let's skip on to a few of the Joseph 2-year-olds then, Kev, because we had God's Window to mention. That's a Gosden horse, won at Nottingham at odds of 1-14. It's been unchanged for the Derby. Unless either of you raise your hand to make a very valid point, we're just going to bypass him. No hands raised. And Prince Alex was a mover for the Chester Cup, having won that 2-mile handicap for Dominic French Davis at Newbury, now 10-1 for that Chester Cup from 14s. But we will talk about that nearer the time, because of course Chester actually just around the corner. Remarkable. Yeah, yes. Here before Sorry. We know it. But I'm rushing on, Kev, because I do want to give those 2-year-olds of Joseph's a bit of a mention. Obviously, 2-year-olds at this time of year catch everybody's attention and seem to get people quite excited. And Joseph has hit the ground running with his. He had Midnight Strike and then Coward of the County, winning the 5 furlongs on the 6 furlong opening 2-year-old race of the season at the Curragh. Give us the lowdown, Kev, on these, starting with the first horse, Midnight Strike. Where did he sit going into this in the 2-year-olds at Joseph's?
Well up there, had been going well. Look, at these were the first two colts to run. He'd run one filly that had gone quite well without winning. But look, you don't know where you stand until you run them. Joseph doesn't work 2-year-olds with older horses, so you just have their collateral form amongst themselves to try and work them out. And I thought he was really good, to be honest. He was quite raw. He ended up kind of getting quite a good educational experience. He was a bit green under pressure and he was powerful late on by a sire that we love, Star Spangled Banner. And look, hopefully he can drive on, Star Spangled Banner and the colours of Team Valley, if he was half as good a state of rest it was, he'd be all right. But this was a lovely, lovely start. But I thought the second fella now was particularly good. Coward of the County in the 6 furlong race, he had really put his hand up at home in his last few bits of work, But the chat was that the Ballydoyle horse Whistle Jacket was the best of their early ones. So it would have been tough to have real confidence going in. But geez, I thought he was very, very good. Like he got a little bit lost mid race. And Dylan, I'd say at halfway, if you got inside his brain, he just would have been thinking, right, look, come between horses, give him a good education, teach him plenty, and we can work from there. But he was powerful inside the final furlong now when he knuckled down and went right away close home, you know, well clear, the beat the Ballydoyle horse by 2.5 lengths, mile clear the rest. Time stood up really well, compared very well. There was a 93 rated, you know, 3-year-old won the maiden that followed it over the same course and distance, and the time stood up really well. He could be a really nice one, really well named as well. Second horse we've seen in recent times to pull their name from that particular song, Vanessa, which you didn't recognize, but when we talked about reading Tommy wrong. And he's not a little rabbit of a 2-year-old, like he's 500 kilos plus, big strong boy. Beautiful horse at the sales by Cody Bear. So I don't, talking about it last night, like there's a chance he might not run before I'd ask it. He'll definitely have no more than one in between then and now, if indeed he does have one. But he's the sharpest 2-year-old that Joseph has had in my time, which is pretty much all of Joseph's time, you know, pre-Ascot. So yeah, you'd be very excited about him.
Okay, very positive indeed. Talking about them at the sale, I think both of them were loss-making pinhooks for those people who got hold of them as foals and resold them as yearlings.
Yeah, and I couldn't believe it with Card of the County, because he was a real beauty. And, you know, he's with Flash Conroy, you know, top man. But look, sometimes at the sales, it just doesn't happen. And Joseph was the benefactor this time. Like, it's not like he was a cheap horse. He was 100 grand, but... Jesus, he's a beauty, you know, beautiful, you know, big walking horse, you know, for a horse that's bred to kind of be a sprinter miler.
That Midnight Strike, Kev, we saw at the Goffs foal sales, and have a picture of him here as a foal that obviously, you know, on the iPad you take it, and that's the joy of the modern world, is you can look back and see what you said about these horses now. Good bodied was the comment there. Brendan, what did you make of these 2-year-olds who jumped out of the pack from maybe in behind, away from the Joseph horses? You know, all that positive chat about that Whistle Jacket for Aidan. Would you be with him next time? Clearly expecting the O'Brien first time out horses to step forward, as we know happens, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, Kevin mentioned that he came with a good reputation. He knew his job, though. He jumped out handy and was able to bag the rail, and the Coward of the County had to go and get him, having not broken as well. So I'd say Whistle Jacket will improve, but he was pretty professional in the race. They'd be a fraction disappointed, I'd say, if he's the best of their early 2-year-olds. But I mean, it is early days, and might have run into a real, real good one. So we'll wait and see.
In fairness, his full brother got beat on debut, Little Big Bear. He found a way to get beat on debut when the birds were singing about him as well. So that didn't stop him being a, you know, Royal Ascot winning 2-year-old, Group One winning 2-year-old. So it was tough old ground. You know, it was tough ground. It was 6 furlongs. He's bred to be fast. So yeah, no, I wouldn't be giving up on him just yet. Now I think he bumped into a right good one, I'm sure he'll benefit from the run himself.
Okay, I think unless anyone has anything else they'd like to mention from Newmarket, Newbury, the Curragh, jump racing, flat racing, raise your hands. Anything else to mention?
I'll give you a quick one on Yosemite Valley and the Gladness. I thought he was really impressive. I know Donick has loved this horse from when he was a 2-year-old, and he's just had a few little unlucky bits and pieces, but he's rolling now, and geez, the way he strode away from Jumbly now in the final 100 yards, I thought was very, very taking. And now where will he end up? Can he win a Group One? I don't know, but I'd say he'll be marching in that direction now. He'll be making up for last time. I thought he was very good.
Jumbly becoming a little bit frustrating or not?
Quite a few of Joseph's older ones coming back have been shaping like that, you know, traveling well and just getting a bit tired, taking a blow. Look, it's a long season. We won't be giving up on her yet now. And look, she looked the winner and then just got a bit tired. So we'll go again.
Okay, let's roll on and talk about a few bits and pieces of news, please. We will kick off with the announcement that Cheltenham are going to be addressing their race schedule for the Cheltenham Festival. Race planning under the microscope for the Cheltenham Festival. Ian Renton came out last week and said that they need to look at the races at the festival. Of course, this is something we've been discussing in depth on this show for many months, even years now. The question is going to be, how daring will they be with their changes? What will they remove? What will they replace? What will they shake up? We obviously don't know the answers to that. This is something Kevin Blake has been very passionate about. And so this is the first positive step. Of course, many of us will want them to be extremely brave with this, but they might have restrictions in place, Kev. What stage are they at now? What changes do you predict versus would hope for, if you see what I mean? Like, we have to be realistic here.
Yeah, look, the one thing we know is that they're going to, you know, which was suspected all along, I suppose, for those familiar with the situation, they're going to be working within the 4 days, 28 race structure. Yeah. That's not going to change. So you're in the zone of changing existing races or whipping one out and whipping one in, you know. So that'll be the thing. Look, there's a lot of moving parts. These things are never as straightforward as you'd like. I sit on pattern committees and things like that. It's a bit easier over jumps, but it's not straightforward. I think, and talking to plenty of people that will be involved in the process, you know, I think there's going to be plenty of appetite for a good level of change. Look, for me, like, I was speaking solely from a personal point of view, you know, I think the novice chases have to be top of the agenda. I think you got to tackle those novice chases. There's four of them. Personally, mm-hmm. I think you only need two of them. Does that mean converting the turners into a novice's handicap? Does it mean you got to tackle the National Hunt Chase in one shape or form of another? There's plenty of different things you could do with it, but you got to tackle it. Cross country chase, I think it has to be very high top of the agenda as well, getting that back to a handicap. Then the novice hurdles will be a bit more contentious, but again, there's three of those. We only need two in my book. And you can keep going. Mayor's program, you know my views on the mayor's program. Again, that's even more contentious. But I'm talking to some of the even the most hardcore mayor's program people that I personally know, I can feel a bit of a change in them and a bit more of a willingness to bend on that. So look, I think those are probably the main areas that you want to stick your elbow into. And see where you end up. But look, I think this year, we've been rattling on about it for years, but I think this year, the ticket sales, the general vibe there, I think it was a real kick and a shock for those that maybe weren't fully appreciating how strong the feeling was amongst people. So I think it's been a real kick. And if we're ever going to get strong, kind of rapid change in a short space of time, I think this year will be the one that we see it. So looking forward to the process now and seeing where it ends up.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be absolutely fascinating, Brendan. And Kevin's touched upon pretty much the like most maybe obvious top of the list type changes. I kind of bashed a few of them out when we were thinking about, you know, when this was on the running order. And my top few suggestions go like this as a quick rattle through. So turners into a novices mid-trip handicap chase, obviously, maybe like a 0 to 140 or something, you know, so the good horses are pushed either side. National Hunt Chase, just back to proper amateurs, back to 4 miles. Like, I think it went to shit once they made all the changes. I know why they made the changes, but we're just talking in a sort of dream world here. Mayor's Novices Hurdle needs to go into a handicap or something. Just something needs to change. Turners, if we're changing that, then we should change the Baring Bingham. That should be a limited handicap as well. Cross Country Chase, as Kev said, into a handicap it goes. And I don't know how you make the changes, but Gold Cup horses shouldn't be able to run in a cross country chase, right? Like, we need to be forcing, like, the cross country should be a niche race for niche horses, not for top class grade one chasers. And then also, I don't know how you'd mix it into there, but like, wouldn't the Cheltenham Festival fans love a proper veterans chase there? I know it's controversial, but they'd get behind it, wouldn't they, Brendan? Do you know, it would fit well with real fans at a Cheltenham Festival, and it would fit.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, I mean, I don't hate it. I mean, if it means getting rid of a race, I'd replace the turners with it for a start. Get rid of whatever you have to do. I'd have a selling hurdle rather than have the turners. So
that's a Rory DeLargy one. He's been campaigning for that for years. There was a seller. There used to be a seller on the Cheltenham Festival card. Oh. Rory's been campaigning for its return.
Okay. Well, we're limited with what we can do because there's one day too many. Never mind one race too many. But if the options are to keep all the races, that's fine, and change some of them into handicaps. That seems the most you can do. Okay, I'll take it. It's not realistic to expect it to go back to 3 days. At least we're addressing the elephant in the room that for too long. The national hunt season has been a planet that orbits the sun, that is the Cheltenham Festival. And then they're all avoiding one another in the run-up to the Cheltenham Festival, and then they're allowed to avoid each other at the Cheltenham Festival. I mean, what sort of insanity is this? You know, so at least people are getting together in a room. There's going to be, they're not all going to share the same views. That would be a bad thing. We'd be able to thrash out some sort of a compromise. They almost certainly won't go as far as I want them to go. But having said that, I haven't got all the answers. So I think we'll have some of our best people on the job. And I mean, just do something, but do something with the turners. It's just it's a heartbreak of a race.
Kev, you could put up one of your like famous clickbait Twitter polls and bash out like which race gets the coal first. And Turners wins, doesn't it? Turners wins hands down.
They'd be there at the National Hunt Chase, I'd say. You know, they both wind people up for the same reasons, but the Turners has had a real negative impact for me. That's robbed us of a lot of what would have been real epic clashes. But, you know, it was the National Hunt Chase contributed this year. Corbett's Cross and Embassy Gardens versus Fact of File et al. You know, would have been super. You know, you knock them down to two options, you know, long or short. We all know, you know, from a very early stage of the season, what type of horse is, and we'll be able to talk about the races properly, you know, from Christmas onwards. And it'd be fantastic. It'd be great for promo. It'd be great for excitement. It'd be great for betting turnover the closer we get to the day. You know, these are all positive things. And when you get like the whole thing, and Lord knows I've been stuck in this conversation for so long. They always say, well, the big trainers and the big owners won't have it. You have Patrick Mullins in the paper saying that a Cheltenham winner doesn't feel the same as it used to. Yeah. You know, they're not going to rear up and object. They know themselves. You know, it's going to take a few quid out of their pocket probably, but, you know, these people love jumps racing deeply as well, and they can see that it's gone in the wrong direction, and they can see what needs to be done. And I actually would think they'd be the last people to rear up if you made, like, quite aggressive changes. And when you've got such a free shot at it, that's what I keep saying to the lads, like, you've got an absolute free shot here. This will be so incredibly popular. If you make these what you might frame as tough decisions, they're actually easy decisions because everyone's going to love them, and there'll be such a wave of positivity follow you into the jump season proper when we're looking forward to the new and improved Cheltenham Festival. You know, it should be a no-brainer, but look, it's never quite as simple as we'd like it to be, but I think we can get it.
No, it's never quite as simple. And I think we can all agree that, you know, there are so many moving parts, so many people to try and just keep on the right side of. It's very political. So it's not just as simple as us sitting here on a podcast saying, take away this and do that. We totally get that. But Brendan, last point on this is it does feel like, you know, this is the opening now. Everyone's on the same page, as Kev said, after this like slight shit show that was the last Cheltenham Festival, now is the time for change. So rather than going in tentatively and then thinking about changing it again in a few years or whatever, like now, surely now is it. Like, this is the opportunity.
Oh, racing's a conservative sport though, Vanessa. It doesn't seem in its nature to make these sweeping changes to me, but I mean, I hope you're right. At least we're having the conversation. Something needs to be done, and the more drastic, the better.
Yeah. And the thing is, Vanessa, the beauty about jumps racing and the jumps pattern is they could make loads of changes for next season. And, you know, after two or three or four or five years, they're not working. You can change them again. It's actually like, in terms of the structure and the ability to make change, like National Hunt Racing, actually, like I'm not saying it's dead easy, but it's way more straightforward than the flat, where you've got the European Pattern Committee looking over your shoulder every time you want to do something. So, like, they really should utilize that freedom. They should utilize the power that they have as the Cheltenham Festival, because like we always say, no matter what they did with the Cheltenham Festival, everyone's still going to want to run there. You know, yeah. that appeal gives you a great amount of power, and they just need to use it for the power of good and make the changes they need to make here, you know.
Yeah. Right, we will be following that with interest. Kev hopefully will be across all things Cheltenham Change in the coming weeks and months. Last thing to mention, all things levy talks, Brendan. Over here, the ministers are urging both sides, British Horse Racing and the bookmakers, to agree a deal sooner rather than later, sort of matter of weeks rather than anything else, all in regards to the latest levy reform. Obviously, British Racing leadership has been asking for the levy rate to be increased, the levy to include money being bet on foreign races by British bettors, and the bookmakers are pushing for a percentage increase in the levy with money set aside for sort of sports promotions. So they've got to meet somewhere in the middle, and Gambling Minister Stuart Andrews has been encouraging both sides to agree to a voluntary deal. So it sounds as though we're going to be getting some answers on this levy reform sooner rather than later. Are you hopeful of that?
Not particularly. Stuart Andrew was hoping to be addressing Parliament on Wednesday, the 24th, with an update to this situation. But I don't think that's going to happen. Maybe it will. The politics is the art of the possible. So maybe they're all going to bash heads. But the bookmakers and the British Racing Authorities are talking to one another. But it just seems, and of course, this is all going on in back room. So I don't have, I'm not privileged to it, but it's been a slow process. And I don't think anything's going to happen in the next week, say, for example. But something has to happen. I mean, they're not sure around these affordability checks, how severe they're going to be in terms
that,
of...
That surely makes the whole thing impossible, Brendan. How could you sort out the levy before you know how tough the affordability checks are going to be? Because that's going to have a massive impact on your turnover levels, etc., one assumes. Yeah. So, Jesus, you... You're trying to sort out the egg before the chicken. You know,
is that why the process is taking so long? The stalling. There's clearly not an agreement. Like, surely, if both sides wanted to hurry this along and get to an agreement, then they could.
That's your kind of levy reform. I think the last set were kind of 7 years ago, and they said, "Yeah, we'll look at that again." You know, and said within the next 7 years. So we're kind of the old timers ticking on that, but we have this massive thing that wasn't even a thing 7 years ago. The affordability checks hanging over, and the industry, you know, turnover has already gone through the floor before they've even been implemented properly with bookmakers front running them. You'd have to be deeply concerned with the way it's going. I just don't know how you could negotiate levy reforms without knowing how the affordability checks are actually going to be implemented. So, Jesus, it's a messy old space at the minute, I'd say.
Indeed. Messy it is. And that about concludes this show, guys. I think we're about wrapped up. Thank you, Brendan Duke, as always. Enjoyed the later start time. Thank you, Kevin Blake. Listeners and viewers out there, thank you for joining us. As always, we'll be back, of course, on Thursday with Racing Only Better. But in the meantime, have a good week. Gamble responsibly if you are gambling. Have fun with it. And join us again on Thursday, where we will be previewing all the weekend's action ahead of the Saturday sport. But for now, thank you very much for listening. That was Wade In.